You're listening to the Blue Box Podcast, sponsored by Starburst Magazine, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking about A Town Called Mercy, so that you don't have to. Hi, I'm JR.
Hello, I'm Lee.
Hi, I'm Mark.
I'm Simon.
And we're upholding our time-honoured tradition. We're going to start with a précis of the story we've just watched. The Doctor, Amy and Rory arrive in a town called Mercy, which appears to be in America's Old West. They are therefore surprised to discover everyone speaking Spanish. However, it is all a deception. The Kralls have recreated the Wild West on their home planet of Asidon and are playing a game with some humans they have teleported up from the set of a 1960s spaghetti western production. It is essentially the Kral version of the amphitheatres of ancient Rome, with these film production crews being forced to dress up as cowboys and run around film sets shooting at each other. The Doctor decides to put a stop to this and finds Chameleon Mark II in an old closet in the TARDIS. Forcing Chameleon to disguise himself as a rather butched-up version of Yul Brynner's character from Westworld, the Doctor sends his metal cowboy out to dispense justice on the Kralls, Wild West style. There is a massive shoot-up in which everyone but the Doctor and the Ponds is shot dead. There is a very sad scene as the Doctor says a final goodbye to Chameleon, but on re-entering the TARDIS, the Doctor reveals to Amy that the Rory she is now married to is in fact an android, Chameleon Mark III, and this is how he was able to sit and wait for her for several million years while the Earth reset itself after the events of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
And that's how that should have been episode. that sounds much better. I love the Kral. That'd been a great idea, actually.
You weren't impressed with A Town Called Mercy?
Mixed, really. There's some bits in it that I absolutely loved, and there's tons of it I didn't like at all.
Simon?
Is that I'm it? Kind of nonplussed by it, I have to say. I was thinking about scores towards the end, thinking, oh, this is, okay. I really want to. There's bits of it I didn't. I'm not big on westerns. I have to say, I'm not a big fan of westerns. And that, what surprised me is that side of it I didn't mind.
Which, considering you like to wander around in leather chaps, is quite ironic, really.
Yeah.
Don't talk about what he does in leather chaps.
Or with leather.
Don't you like leather chaps?
Ooh. Do you like leather chap?
That's Mark. A different podcast.
Oh, we've not done it on the spot for ages. Mark, 60 seconds on.
Leather chaps.
Cheers, Simon.
The gunfighters.
Yeah, don't give me the gunfighters, please. Don't.
Oh, sorry.
He's looking like it.
Mark, 60 seconds on the gunfighters. Starting now.
Right. It's a cracking William Hartnell story. Some people don't like it because of the song sung by Linda Barron. And my opinion is, if you watch it perhaps an episode a week, you'll love it, because that's the way it was meant to be seen. If you try and sit and watch the whole thing in one go, you'll just go completely crazy. You will just want to throw the TV out the window. I think William Hartnell's on really good form in this one. It's probably, in my opinion, his last really good story. And he's got some really good comedic moments in that story, so that was memorable for that. Poor Stephen has to wear a ridiculous cowboy outfit, and I don't think the actor whose name escapes me at the moment, Peter Purvis. I don't think he was too happy with that, or with the idea of having to sing in that one. Not good at all, but a great episode and fun. Much maligned, but I think it's had a bit of a reassessment in recent years.
Okay, that's about a minute.
Can I just say I agree with Mark? I watched it recently, and I was expecting it to be really, really bad because of all the reviews, and it always been at the bottom of the polls. But actually, I found it a bit of a rip-roaring bit of fun. In fact, I would watch that over this episode.
A three-word review of the Gunfighters, not remotely ropey.
Very good. Have you been sitting on that for years?
Getting back to this
really.
One.
Yeah, we are supposed to be talking about this
Two
episode.
Two things really struck me about it.
Go on.
The first one was, it rang a lot of bells with me with Boomtown from the first series.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. With the sort of the bad guy kind of questioning the Doctor's own morality and asking him to sort of look back at...
what Margaret Slitheen.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was done a lot better, though.
Hang on, though. We'll come back to that. What was your other thing?
The other thing that really struck me was the music. I think Murray Gold must have had a ball.
I was going to say, that was going to be my quote, the two best things in it are Ben... What's his name?
Bowdler, is it?
Browder. Ben Browder.
Browder. From,
he played Isaac, well, did he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from in... Farscape.
Right.
And the music was stunning. Mm. And I know a lot of people like to buy the CDs of the music from Doctor Who. I haven't yet. I there's certain pieces I like, but that I would like to own on CD. I thought it was gorgeous.
I'm sure you'll get your chance. There'll be a nice big sweep from that on the next CD.
I will. I kept thinking Hitchhikers as well because of the use of banjo. But
And a Jew's harp somewhere in there, I think.
Yeah.
In a kind of electronic fashion, which I was... Yeah, I'd like to hear that in isolation.
I'd say the music was stronger at the start than it was at the end. Would anybody agree?
Do you know what? Yes, I think so, definitely. By the end, it was a little bit syrupy. I didn't like that.
Yeah, it did.
But there was a lovely moment where we had no music.
Yes.
First time in ages, I think, where they are just very about effective. To draw at high noon. It's silent, and it's really, really powerful moment. That
with a clock.
With the clock.
Yeah, yeah.
No music.
Worst thing about the episode, can I say?
Go on.
Was the cyborg's voice.
Bit too obvious.
Awful.
Not as bad as Bane.
Hello.
From Batman. Blimey.
Now, somebody pointed this out on Twitter. I've got to give a shout out to Eric Escamilla. He said that Bane in that movie sounds very much like William Hartnell.
Oh. I've not seen it yet.
Yeah, he does.
I've not seen it.
So what was wrong with the force then?
It's just a bit of pitch shift and a bit of... I'm getting all technical here, but a bit of pitch shift and a bit of vocoder in there. And
that's only the Dalek.
Very obvious. I mean, I kept thinking Red Dwarf. Sort of thing they're doing Red Dwarf rubbish.
Yeah, it did feel a bit Red Dwarfy in places.
They can get creative with those voices, surely. I think just a normal voice with a bit of... I don't know.
Well, he
was getting technical, but, you know, it kind of boomed through and just thought... It wasn't very convincing.
He was a cyborg. His whole body's been pitch shift.
Was it an English
pitch
accent?
Pitch shifted. Pardon?
Did the cyborg have an English accent?
No, he was American as well, wasn't he?
No.
Cyborg was American? I can't remember.
No, because they were... the doctor, the other doctor, was speaking with an English accent
English,
as well.
Yeah,
so I don't think that was...
Performances, the other doctor.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
What's the name of the actor?
Oh,
God, we all do
that. I'm trying to think what he's been. He's been in so much, hasn't he?
No.
Gavin and Stacey.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah, his acting throughout was very good, and he delivered the lines.
I love the bit where he turned his head away. When he was in the cell, laying in the cell, and there was a point where he turned his head away. I thought that was lovely. Mm. Really nicely done.
I mean, overall, there were some nice moments.
It was a very odd tone. That was the thing. Mm.
It felt like the Terminator meets the Waltons or something. Do you know what I mean? And with a bit of Westworld thrown in. I mean, it surely was referencing all of those things.
Now, if only you'd said, good night, John Boy, that would have been great.
No, if only you'd said, good night, John Boy.
Yeah. He should have had that in there somewhere. But it didn't kick along, did it? I felt I was like looking at the ceiling at some points and thinking, come on, move along a bit, move along.
The first half, I thought, aren't we being spoiled? After the previous dinosaurs episode, I thought, aren't we being spoiled? Because this is, but then it slowed down and started being a little bit obvious.
It sort of the first 15 minutes. You're spending the first 15 minutes thinking, where is this going?
Mm.
And then as soon as the two doctors meet, and especially after as soon as the two doctors meet, you get the heads up that there's something going on with the other
he's
doctor.
He's not all he seems.
He's like this guy who's fallen out of the sky and he's doing all these good things, and you know he's not.
Well,
and a cyborg.
As soon as he said, Amy said...
He gave it away straight away as soon as he said about being a parent.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I just thought, okay, so he's made the cyborg.
Yeah.
Right away, I wrote it down on a bit of paper and showed it to
Simon.
So
for the first 10 minutes, the cyborg's the bad guy and the doctor's the good guy. But as soon as you meet the doctor, you know, actually, it's going to be one of those where they turn the tables.
But then it twists again at the end to try and make it a bit more, you know, to keep you on the edge.
I wasn't
of the
seat,
but sold it
on the end, though, that the doctor would kill himself.
No.
And I think that's why it didn't sell itself. I wonder if that's in the writing or in the direction, though. Saul Metstein is the same guy who did the dinosaur one. The director. And he's obviously had a ball with that. And he's obviously maxed out on that for all it's worth. He's really sold that. I wonder if they perhaps didn't have enough time in the Spanish locations for America. And he perhaps didn't get the time to get the performances and the... And the dynamics. He didn't get maybe the dynamics that he needed. Because it was the dynamics of the episode that were at fault, probably. There was some really nice dialogue.
Mm.
Rory and Amy needn't have been there at all. In fact, it would have been better if Matt Smith just turned up.
By himself
and had a whole load of new companions within the town to help him out. Like the young boy would have been good, Isaac.
The only scene, really, where Rory and Amy did anything was Amy's scene in the middle where she persuaded the doctor not to give the guy up.
I like the little scene with Isaac, though, and Rory, where they hid behind the rock. And it was...
That was amusing.
It was funny.
Yeah, and there was a lovely tense scene with the doctor and the youngster. That worked for me. I like that. That was believable, and you know, I think it was.
And Matt Smith sold it with his reaction at the end of the
but there
sequence.
Was a, that's right, he did, and there was a lovely line from the kid saying, "You know, is he worth the risk?" And Matt Smith says, "I don't know, but you are."
Yeah, that's a brilliant line.
Absolutely brilliant line.
And there were some nice comedy moments as well. Susan the horse.
Yes.
And
Stephen Moffat says that's his favourite line in the whole five episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Susan. This is a new thing for Matt Smith, isn't it? That's his special ability.
Talking to the animals.
He's a Dr. Doolittle.
Babies and what have you.
Yeah.
And when he orders his tea as well at the bar, that's quite cool.
That was a nice moment. I was doing like a cliche count and ran out, basically. Mm. There was loads of cliches throughout the whole thing. But the first thing is walking into the bar with that crane shot.
Yeah.
You know,
and the piano stops.
And the piano stops and all that stuff. And, we had, and the Undertaker runs straight up and does, you know, that again, that comes out.
Straight out of a fistful of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to reference
Nice
this.
Payoff on that, though, when he does it again at the end after he's just told him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was good timing.
I was hoping it would take risks with the Western. I thought it might just do something a little bit different. But unfortunately, it actually did everything I imagined it would have done. And that's too predictable.
Yeah, maybe. Apart from having
Delta and the Bannermen in Wild West. Really.
I'd just say the spaceship.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
Three words?
Go on.
Mork and Mindy.
Oh, I don't know, Mork and Mindy.
Looked like a big tic tac, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was like a tic tac shaped egg.
What a shit.
Yeah.
It did. I thought that was an egg. That's the one thing I got wrong. I was just hoping for it to be an egg, so it'd be something completely different.
So a dinosaur could hatch out of
it. It was an egg in Mork and Mindy.
It was, yeah.
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 Oh, right. I don't know Mork and Mindy well enough.
And the other thing is that I believed that this would be this year's Curse of the Black Spot, Curse of the Bad Script or whatever it is. But and it's almost reached that. But I think the performances were a lot better from the actors in this than it was in the pilot.
I think the writing was... I don't know, it's one of those funny things. Toby Whithouse is brilliant with characters.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely brilliant with characters. I mean, you only need to look at, you know, a single episode of Being Human to see how good he is with characters. He's brilliant with characters. And sometimes when he gets the right idea, God Complex...
I love the God plot.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Really, can't even say it, but...
That's a brilliant, brilliant episode. And School Reunion is.
Hmm.
But then sometimes he seems to get given, maybe, an idea and doesn't quite run with the idea, because Vampires of Venice was also a little short, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, Vampires of Venice was nice. The difference between that and this was that pretty much kept the fun quotient up. I was expecting this to be a lot more fun, really.
I mean, what he could have done with is add in an extra armful of those cyborgs, and at the end, suddenly just going pew, 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 suddenly turning up. Because, you know, that they've all come to hunt down the Doctor. Also, I don't know, but it would be more interesting to have a bigger payoff with the alien culture than what we got. You know, we got this kind of like little green strip down the side of his face. It's a bit Star Trek, that, wasn't it? A little bit Deep Space Nine, a bit cheap.
The ending was...
As opposed to, various forms of forehead.
I suppose they spent the money on going to Spain and doing dinosaurs the week before, really.
Two Doctors all over again.
Maybe. I thought the ending was a little of an anticlimax, though, now you bring it up. Mm. I mean, it seemed to...
The production values were very, very good.
It looked... Again.
Yeah,
it looked
the location
nice.
Always helps as well, doesn't it? Yeah.
It looked nice, but it didn't move very... Well, like I said before, the dynamics didn't seem right.
No.
It's like when there was supposed to be excitement, it wasn't quite exciting enough.
No.
And when there was supposed to be tension, it wasn't quite tense enough.
Should have watched Quick and the Dead.
Well, maybe. Yes.
There were moments
of saying in conversation, the only Western I really like.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't behave like a Western. Not really.
Oh, well, no, Quick and the Dead's brilliant.
Yeah.
But this... It's a Toby Whithouse script, and Toby Whithouse scripts, the characters are not a big enough caricature to have done something like Quick and the Dead with a direction. So you couldn't have gone in that direction. So then you also couldn't go too far in the direction of the spaghetti westerns, because again, the characters were too three-dimensional. So, you know, the thing about spaghetti westerns as well is the characters are pretty much paper thin in spaghetti westerns. It's all sold on the idea.
Well, they touched on it with the music, didn't they?
And that's what I was talking about at the start. It came on a bit like a spaghetti western at the start, but then it didn't keep that up.
No, I'm kind of glad it didn't, because that would have been... Well, it was all obvious anyway, but it would have been even more obvious.
Kind of fell between stools, really.
Yeah, quite.
It's like there was a fight between Toby Whithouse's script, which was filled with a lot of humanity, and then on the other hand, you had obviously the production were wanting it to be more of a spaghetti western, or even perhaps more like Quick and the Dead, which is obviously a pastiche spaghetti western. So the production is going for spaghetti western. Toby Whithouse is going for a real human story filled with proper characters. And somewhere in between, it just didn't quite fit, did it?
You'd have been better off having the town turning against the cyborg and then the Doctor getting annoyed with the town. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe,
don't hurt him. He doesn't mean to do this kind of thing. That would have been more... For something that's got like a gunslinger in it and it's a Western, there's not a lot of firing of guns, as it were.
There wasn't a lot of gunslinging.
It did seem a bit unusual, in as much as you got the Doctor there, stood there, and they're going to have the big sort of... pay off at the end. You know, he's got his coat back so he can show off his gun, and you think, well, that's not the Doctor, he doesn't carry a gun. It just seemed a bit...
Well, he actually brings out the Sonic.
He does,
I wrote down before it came out, guessing it.
I just say, with all those horses around, when you're living in a town with all those horses around, sooner or later you're going to fall between stools.
God. Hey, but going back to our serious point,
it
took me 3 minutes to get to the joke after Giles said it, but I thought I'd let you make your point.
Yeah, there's some real tumbleweed.
But there's a scene earlier where he pulls a gun on the Doctor.
The man who never would pulls a gun and puts it to somebody's head, which was so unlike the
Doctor. That's
a
different Doctor's line, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
They did sell this on the Doctor's a man who would never pick up a gun, except... in the one situation where the Doctor would pick up a gun. And they were trying to sell this on being the one situation where the Doctor would pick up a gun.
You know he'd never fire, but you know that the effect, that's what he's thinking, that the effect
thing
of a gun to
is,
someone's head for
making. It was too grey. It was too much of a grey area. Probably because Toby Whithouse wrote the characters too well. If he'd have made Carla Jex a real proper villain, but actually he gave him enough motivation for his villainy that actually he wasn't that much of a villain. So when the Doctor picked up the gun, I wasn't sold on it.
Yeah.
At that point, I was thinking, no, the Doctor wouldn't. The Doctor might pick up a gun if he was faced with somebody like Adolf Hitler, but this guy's not Adolf Hitler.
It was a little bit... there was two colours going on with that guy, wasn't there? Because one minute he would be like, you know... oh, this guy is absolute war criminal. And then the next minute is, oh, but I'm being really nice to everyone. Well, but they deserved everything they got.
Yeah, no, I kind of like that. I like that, but if it had been more black and white,
so quickly,
it would have been
better,
because that could have given him a bit of a schizo personality that you really couldn't trust him. That would have been better to instill more of a tension into the character
from him.
But it was a bit too grey every time he changed.
It gave the impression that he was just pretending to be a nice guy. That's the impression I got. Yeah.
What did he do wrong? Did he commit genocide again? Is that what he did?
No, he experimented
on his fellow men, didn't he?
On his fellow men.
So there was a war, wasn't there, that had been going on for 9 years, and he finished it by creating these cyborgs and wiping out the other side. So it's genocide.
Okay, so he wiped out hundreds, thousands of people, possibly. Solomon did the same thing with the Silurians, and they both stopped at about the same time to talk to the Doctor about their plans. And it was about the same length as well. I was thinking, hang on a minute, I've just seen this.
Well, that's Doctor Who voice.
But it just seemed a little bit kind of obvious.
The thing is, Solomon wiped out the Silurians for profit, for nothing else but profit. He just wiped them out in cold blood.
Yeah.
Whereas Jax, his country, his planet, was fighting a war, and all those people that got wiped out would probably have been wiped out in that war anyway over a much longer period of time, and probably more people would have died too.
More of an Oppenheimer figure, really.
Yeah, so I wasn't sold on his villainy. To me, he was not a Hitler. He was just a man who did what he had to do to try and stop the killing, which is what eventually did. And whatever killing that he did in order to stop the killing would probably have been less killing than if he hadn't done it and the longer-term killing had been allowed to continue. So although his methods obviously were suspect, and there was a big question over his methods, what he actually did probably, it's not black and white and you can't say one way or the other, but that's exactly it. It's a grey area.
Happened in the story to make him take his life.
But that's why the Doctor loses his temper with him, because obviously he's pointing a mirror at him and saying, look, this is what I've done. Yeah, and obviously the Doctor's got his past, and it's kind of alluded to where he's killed off all the Time Lords and what have you, and it's...
Yeah, I know, but I don't like it when the Doctor meets somebody he's never met before and they kind of guess through his eyes that he's a killer of his own people. Yeah. I mean, for goodness
that's
sake.
That's happening a lot, isn't it?
That's happening too much. Even now, when he should be invisible. He's an invisible character at the moment. I don't know. I mean, I kind of enjoyed it, but I thought it was a bit slow and a bit...
Nice to think the cyborg's got a bit of a sense of humour in it, because he's come down from this other planet and he decides to dress up like Yul Brynner.
Do you know Toby Whithouse hadn't seen Westworld?
Oh, really?
Still hasn't, as far as I'm aware. No,
he must.
He's
have seen
very Borg as well, wasn't he? The makeup was very Borg.
It was Borg, yeah, but it was Terminator as well, wasn't it? Because he even had Terminator in his eye.
I'm assuming that's more down to the production design than the script.
Yeah. Yeah?
Well, Toby Whithouse would have been presumably given Western, and you have a cyborg, and Toby Whithouse writes the script from those elements.
Course, yeah, of course.
So that's probably from. Maybe not. I mean, maybe Stephen Moffat just said
sometimes
Western,
the writer will give a description of what he's seeing. I'll kind of make him like this and like this and like this.
So, the thing is, though, you write a Western in Doctor Who and you have to have science fiction elements in now. What else are you going to write?
Oh, it's quite nice that
the Kraals?
It's quite nice that he's got that hidden away in it, the whole war criminal thing, because that does give it a twist in some respects.
I know. I was really hankering for a montage. I wanted to see, as he was talking about his life as a war criminal, you get this kind of, this moment where you see all these bombs and shells and cyborgs walking through. And I know they don't have the money, but it would have been great, wouldn't it, just have that little snippet of his alien planet totally wiping each other out.
Or else you could just have had a cutaway to Carla Jex with his face off to the side, just sort of smiling wryly to himself.
As explosions happen in front of him.
No, instead of the flashbacks.
Yeah, maybe.
Just a wry smile to the camera. Caves of Androzani style.
Some stock footage from some old film and just CGI'd the tattoo on each of their faces.
Or just coloured it in funny to make it look like it was a green sky or something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're just getting silly.
We are getting silly.
So what other...
You say that, but there's a horse called Susan throughout that.
We haven't spoken about... Mark brought it up and we've not really come back to it. Boomtown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Russell T Davies do that successfully? Because I know a lot of people have a problem with the Russell T Davies one.
I know a lot of people don't like Boomtown, but I really like it.
Yeah, I'm with Mark on that. I really liked Boomtown the first time it came out.
Mm.
And, you know, watching it since, I'm still enjoying it.
Mm.
Good.
Do you feel Russell T Davies wrote the argument well enough?
Yeah.
I think it holds together better for me, on certainly on first viewing, compared to the one we've just watched.
Yeah, but again, it is an alien who doesn't know him that well, who purports to know him really well.
Mm.
And that annoys me in any of the Doctor Who's that are happening at the moment. Unless it's the master.
But of course, she's seen him wipe out her entire family.
Mm.
Yeah, but then she does go a little bit more into, oh, you know, what kind of person are you? You're a Time Lord. Yeah, so there are moments throughout Boomtown where I think, well, how do you know really what he's like? But no, I thought it worked really well. And also, she has an ulterior motive going on all the way through anyway.
Let's not forget where it was positioned in the series as well. It was so soon after the series had come back to start questioning the Doctor's.
Yeah.
Well, Boomtown was a filler episode for another episode that fell through. It was written at the last minute.
Well, it felt a bit like that to me. But,
it's
a bit of an in-betweeny.
I liked what they did with that. Yes, it was an in-betweeny, and there was some humour in it, but I don't know.
It felt a little bit like the Slitheen had come back a bit too soon, but maybe it was better that it was fresh in people's minds when they talked about it. I don't know.
Mm.
Mind you didn't really see Margaret turn into a Slitheen in that episode.
That's probably one of the reasons why I like it.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of the Slitheen. So.
I love the Slitheen.
No, but I did like her.
Yes,
I thought the whole episode just with her was good enough.
I thought they looked great.
Yeah, I thought they looked fantastic. Those big black baby eyes.
Have you ever been in the presence of a Slitheen? Have you seen them at all?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, they're really weird.
Quite impressive.
freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a very freaky-looking monster. I could imagine, perhaps, if that episode had come together better, because the Aliens of London was obviously the very first one they made, and they were still learning. Not just learning, they were starting to learn. So what they did with the Slitheen in that, they probably wouldn't do if they were to do the Slitheen from scratch now, but they are a freaky-looking monster. Mm. And I can imagine kids getting nightmares off Slitheen.
Yeah.
And after all, that's what they're there for.
Big
claws.
Did you not think Toby Whithouse wrote that aspect of it well?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was strong enough. I didn't feel it was.
I do wonder if this episode will be one that grows as you watch it more.
I was thinking that as well, actually.
I do find that with a lot of stories, you sit and watch them, you have an initial first reaction, and you go back and watch them again, and you can see it in a different light.
We might be looking at dinosaurs in the spaceship about a year ahead and go, God, that was awful, but that Western was brilliant.
Possibly. It wouldn't surprise me at all, because it was subtle. That was the thing about it. Mm. I think it's because the last episode was dinosaurs on a spaceship, and that was just so mad and big and in your face. That actually we were expecting a mad and big and in-your-face Western, and because it was so subtle and so low-key throughout most of it, that actually maybe it'll be a grower, and, you know, maybe a couple of viewings down the road, we might come to get a lot of respect for it.
Maybe.
Because Toby Whithouse is a damn good writer.
Stop looking at it as a Western and look at it as a...
Doctor Who.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are there other genres that Doctor Who hasn't touched on yet? I'm trying to think.
What, like the romance? Period romance.
Yeah, yeah.
Pride and Prejudice with Daleks.
Now, there's an idea.
We've got this series of filmic episodes, haven't we? So that's going to be touching on other ones, I suppose.
Well, it's funny because next one's Power of Three, which is probably going to be more of a romantic comedy.
Possibly. We don't know anything about it.
No, but it's possibly going to be... it's not going to be a romantic comedy, but it will be more that way inclined than probably anything we've seen, apart from maybe Gareth Roberts' Lodger and Closing Time episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely looks like it's going to be somewhere in that direction. And then we don't really know much about Angels Take Manhattan either.
No, or Angels in Harlem, as you wanted to call it.
Yeah, that would have been better. Now it sounds like a Muppet episode.
I was thinking more Leonard Cohen myself.
Angels Take Manhattan is more Muppets, wasn't it? Wasn't it
the Muppets Take Manhattan? Yeah. Named after the Leonard Cohen song.
Oh, I see.
Did he write about Muppets? I should know that.
First we take Manhattan.
Yeah.
He didn't write about Muppets, Leonard
Then
Cohen.
We take Berlin.
And REM did it.
Yeah, they did.
Why did they do it? It was a B-side.
What was it?
They quite often did covers on the B-sides. And for anybody who's too young to know what a B-side is.
For anyone who's too young to know who REM are.
The star, the Marshall star, was that William Hartnell's? Was that a myth? A rumour?
Oh, I should imagine really? It's a myth. Would that still survive?
I heard somewhere, or maybe I read somewhere, it's just one of those things. I thought it may have been the same star from the episode.
That was the only potential link between that and the old story, wasn't
possibly,
it?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, because Curse of the Black Spot, obviously, pirate story in the new series, and there'd been a pirate story in the old series. And there was a link between the two because of the character. Mm. And this time... You wondered before we started watching it, is Toby going to do a little reference to the gunfighter somewhere?
Yeah,
there wasn't anything there, was there?
No, well, the Doctor became Marshall.
Auntie Mabel could
have
come out.
Does he do that in the Gunfighters?
I think so, yeah.
Does he become Marshall in the Gunfighters?
I can't remember now.
He does, I'm sure of it. Yeah, he does for a bit.
He gets confused for Doc Holliday, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I can't remember now.
Oh,
but it was good. It would have been quite fun.
Of course, I don't suppose, unless you wanted to remake the Gunfighters, how are you going to refer to it in this, to be honest? Because, you know, that set of characters in that particular story is completely self-contained. The only way you can go back to that is just by doing exactly the same story again, essentially.
Yeah.
I had a moment at the end. I mean, I hadn't... Through Dinosaurs, we were smiling like kids all the way through it, you know, in a candy store. This one, I wasn't smiling through it. I was watching and I was trying to, you know, get into it. But
we didn't
right
have
at
many
the end,
chuckles, did we?
No, not many chuckles. One or two.
The
funny
toothpick
moments.
Bit was good.
Toothpick was hilarious, wasn't it? But at the end, when the TARDIS was in the middle of the Western town, I just smiled. I thought that's a lovely. That's
and
a
the
great
shot
image.
Where they've got it kind of focused on the sign on the front of the police box, and you see it coming and going. That's quite cool.
Yeah,
I like that. Right. I thought it was quite a nice artistic touch.
Clever. Yarp.
And at the end, where the cyborg's saying, well, I'm just going to go off and walk off into the desert and explode.
Yeah.
You know straight away
he's
that...
He's making the Marshall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which, again, is a silly idea, because he's going to be there forever, isn't he? He's not... Or is he? I don't know. Is he going to turn up in another story?
Well, that's implied.
Well, the girl at the end...
It's just anachronistic cyborgs hanging around.
So the girl at the end in the voiceover implies that the girl we see when we're looking at her is actually her grandmother, and the cyborg has been there for then five generations.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, that's probably about 100 years he's still been there.
But he's half flesh and half cyborg. Well, so
he is a walking skeleton with cyborg bits.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe.
That'll be cool. Bring
that would
back.
Be really cool.
That would be Terminator 2, wouldn't it?
I'll tell you, I'm going to do a special edition of that where I pitch shift his voice back up. I'll do that and we'll see how it comes out.
He'll probably talk like this.
Yeah.
How about Cher?
Give him to me!
What did you think of the voiceover, the framing voiceover?
Great for the beginning. I thought the voiceover was lovely at the beginning. It was actually pitched just right. The accent was okay. The story was like, oh yeah, this is good. I'm getting this. The opening sequence was great as well. But at the end, it was like, yeah, a bit too syrupy by that point. I thought, no, because I hadn't been brought into the story the way that Toby obviously wanted us to be brought into the story emotionally. By the end of it, I was thinking, you can cut now.
I may be shot down in flames, but and that all of the actors in it were American, but there was only one dodgy American accent, I thought.
From?
The youngster.
The youngster, yeah, he did sound
more
did Bristol than
more American. Bristol.
Yeah. You said that when we were watching
I know,
it.
Is that a Bristol?
But probably accent? Find out he is American, but... And I never understand why they don't just employ American actors when there's an American accent needed.
Maybe it was.
Maybe it was, yeah. Maybe he just had a...
Maybe
he was an American who lived in Bristol for a while, you know.
Well, you know, America is a country of immigrants.
Well, there is that.
Speaking of American accents, though, how did you find the accents in Daleks in Manhattan?
Ooh,
not quite so good.
No, really?
No.
There were quite a number of Americans in that.
Yeah, it didn't... I don't know, something about it didn't work. Those American accents.
Andrew Garfield did it well, didn't he?
Hmm.
I liked Daleks in Manhattan, though. I must be pretty much one of a kind with that.
Yep.
It's okay. No, I quite enjoyed it.
I mean, I'm not saying by any means it's a classic, but I thought it was a thoroughly entertaining story. And I quite liked a lot of the things it did. The period, it, you know, and...
I love New York, and I love that period of time, but...
I liked the Hooverville side, conniving Daleks.
Great. Really good.
Yeah.
I liked the conniving Daleks. And I loved the cliffhanger.
Mm.
That's one of those Doctor Who does something completely out of left field, completely mad and completely bonkers.
Mm.
You know, it was one of those cliffhangers that... It's a shame it was spoiled by the Radio Times, but even on by having the, you know, the tentacle Dalek thing on the front of the Radio Times, that still couldn't spoil the moment for you when the Dalek opens up and he climbs out and those tentacles are just sort of waving around.
That was such a weird moment. We were coming back from Cornwall and I walked into a garage and there it was, staring at me. And I went, the first thing I said was, thanks a lot, Radio Times. Just completely spoiled that for me.
Yeah.
I hate being spoiled. And it was, And when he crawls out, of course, and he's all a little bit unwieldy and not sure of his limbs and, you know, I'm this new kind of... I love the idea of that, but he was just so useless, wasn't he? As, as a creature. Pretty rubbish, really.
Well, I suppose he was
How is he any
be...
better than being in a metal casing with a load of guns?
Well, he wasn't supposed to be...
Suit.
He wasn't supposed to be better. He was supposed to be surviving, wasn't he?
Yeah, the next generation.
Which was the... Yeah, that was the idea, that these were the last four Daleks, and in order to survive, they had to adapt. And they had to adapt to being human, really. And that's what they were trying to do. I did think that story was, you know, superbly daft. You know, magnificently daft.
Right. Mm.
Oh. And I enjoyed it for that.
There was another little tiny religious slant in this, wasn't there? About the gods.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a very, very small thing. I don't know whether Toby, because he's god complex and... Don't know whether gods are something that he's going to be peppering throughout his stories, but
well, School Reunion was about the God equation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I suppose there was stuff in Vampires of Venice.
Possibly.
I don't know.
It was a nice little extra to throw in there, but again, it wasn't explored a lot.
There were the scenes
in
the church.
The belief of all the people that he's wronged. Are going to be on his back or something. He's going to be carrying up a mountain.
Yeah, some of that stuff was really nice.
Good
that was a great speech as well.
But it wasn't deep enough for me to believe.
That story, probably, oddly, seeing as it seemed a lot slower moving than I was expecting, it actually also felt too short because the characters were so... The characters, a real weird dichotomy going on between the characters being really three-dimensional but not very rich.
Mm.
And I think that richness maybe could have been brought if, you know, I hesitate to say maybe it could or should have been a two-parter, but maybe...
No!
Well, no, exactly, but...
Yeah, please, no!
Yeah, no.
But if we'd had more time to spend with those people in that town, and of course, concomitantly, a bigger cast, and...
Just swallowed the dictionary.
But a bigger cast and more depth to their relationships.
Yeah.
And then perhaps had the gunslinger not right so up front from the start, because you found out way too soon what was going on with Carla Drake.
Yeah, that was another
Jex.
Thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If that had been the revelation sort of towards the end of the first episode, so the first episode had been something weird's going on in this town and spooky for 40 minutes.
Mm.
And then the second episode, bring the gunslinger in and have all the Western tropes.
You could have done it in the 45 minutes as well,
fair. It reminded me a bit of, this is going to sound really odd, but bear with me. It reminded me a bit of Victory of the Daleks. Victory of the Daleks comes in with an absolutely amazing idea. These Daleks saying, I am your soldier, and do you want a cup of tea? And all this kind of stuff. And these this is really spooky weird. Yeah. And it throws the Doctor on the wrong foot, because this is not what Daleks are supposed to be doing. So he knows something's up and he's got to persuade other people that something's up. And then bang, 8 minutes into the episode, that bit's all dealt with. And then the next 30 minutes of the episode are essentially running around and not achieving very much. When you could have stretched out that first 10 minutes to 25 and crammed the last 30 minutes into 15. And
yeah, because there was a small amount of doubt. You did start thinking, is the Doctor wrong? Is there really something a bit odd about this Dalek? Is there something new going on here?
I love that first
and
part.
As you say, yeah. if you'd stretched it out.
And that was the same with this, because that mystery at the start could have been upheld. Like I just said, if it had been a two-parter, you could have had that mystery for the entire first episode, and it would have been good. That's what I would like to have seen with Amy's Choice, where I've said this before, but in Amy's Choice, the Dream Lord comes in right at the start of the episode and tells everybody what's going on.
Yeah.
Mm. Draw the mystery out. I think, you know, the 45-minute story, in the first series, the 45-minute story, famously, most people thought they didn't quite work out how to fit a Doctor Who into 45. And there were some episodes with too much and it was all crammed in. And there were other episodes where they'd deliberately not written very much because they knew they only had 45. And actually, it felt a bit stretched out. Well, this was one of those ones where, curiously enough, it felt like there wasn't enough for the 45 minutes. So this was almost felt like a bit like a throwback to the early series when Doctor Who had just come back and they weren't quite sure how to fill the episodes.
Yeah, it did feel a bit stretched.
Unlike Dinosaurs, which filled the episode perfectly. Mm. So there was kind of that weird thing going on as well. But
it was all killer, no filler, wasn't it, Dinosaurs? That's the thing.
Yeah, whereas this constant. Was, you know, the whole thing in this episode basically turned on one idea. It was this guy Jex was the bad guy who was now pretending to be the good guy and he had to be handed over. And, you know, there wasn't much story outside of that. So all the bits where Rory and the Marshal are running around in the desert while the Doctor's off on his horse. I mean, the Doctor's off on his horse and he just seemed to be out there for an age.
Yeah.
While you're thinking, hang on, Rory's out there with this gunslinger standing over him, about to be killed if you don't turn up in the TARDIS
really
quick.
Thick. What was the plan with them? They were going to wait there until the Doctor brought the ship.
Well, the Doctor was going to come with the TARDIS and pick them up.
Yeah,
right.
They were sent out to distract the gunslinger, so
the Doctor could fetch the TARDIS.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and it was only because the Doctor accidentally set off the car alarm on the egg
that
the gunslinger turned around and walked off.
Yeah.
I mean, that was funny. There was,
yeah,
there were some funny moments, but the funny moments were all in like the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And after that, there was kind of a weird sort of hole in that episode that nothing was quite filling.
All the elements were there, weren't they? But it felt like one would undermine the other.
I think
the fact that Gunslinger is a gunslinger with this hat, black hat, and looks like a baddie and all that sort of thing, undermines that actually the heart of it is quite a serious, gutsy.
I think, like I said before, I think it's probably going to be one of those episodes that actually, given time and more viewings, will seem a lot better than it did on the first. Because that's the thing with Doctor Who. You go in and we had just watched Dinosaurs. The last episode we watched was Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. So we were all geared up for another big movie and thinking, you know, this Western one is going to be just as much fun. That's what we were expecting. And we got something totally different that we didn't expect. So probably we're having a negative reaction to not getting what we expected. Whereas the next time we watch it, we won't be expecting another Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, but with cowboys in the Wild West. And maybe because our expectations will also be not just for something else, but also shorter because we didn't enjoy it as much as we think. Mm. Next time we watch it, we'll probably go in thinking, oh, I'm not expecting to enjoy this much. Maybe I'll be more pleasantly surprised. And obviously then it will be better than we thought it was because it wasn't a bad episode by any stretch of the imagination.
No, not at all.
So I think it's going to be one of those that's like a slow burner.
I don't think it's going to rate very highly in the poll at the end of the year.
No, I think most people are expecting, you know, a big, daft spaghetti western. And they're not going to get it, are they?
I think the biggest crime is that Rory and Amy just weren't used that much. You know, she was only used once. And it was very good when she was used. And Rory was just used as bait twice.
There were about two-thirds of the way through, there were several scenes where the Doctor was doing stuff. And you kept going to reaction shots to Rory and Amy, and I was expecting a bit of dialogue.
Mm.
And then it cut away before they said anything. It was just them looking at
it. Like, oh, we've got these two. We have to do something with them. Quick, to a cutaway shot.
Yeah, and then it was like...
You know, wouldn't it be better if, say, Rory had had to face a cyborg for some reason? That would have upped the tension a bit more, wouldn't it?
Well, when he was out in the desert.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. The Doctor throws in the sonic screwdriver.
In fact, that would have been a...
And he gets the setting wrong.
Rory and the cyborg in the desert would have been a great midway through the first episode of a two-parter sequence. Once you've set the mystery up, when you bring in the second element, a bit like the pig halfway through Aliens of London. Because in Aliens of London, you're kind of being set up for one thing, and then they throw the pig in, and all of a sudden it turns into something entirely different.
Yeah.
And it's that moment when the pig turns up, when the episode turns on its head.
Yeah.
And, you know, that cyborg turning up in this could have turned the episode on its head.
Yeah, could have done.
But, of course, you had the cyborg in the pre-titles. It's almost like it gave you everything in the first 10 minutes. I mean, I know I said this half an hour ago, but it did. It really gave you everything in the first 10 minutes. And then after that...
It was a clever pre-titles sequence that made you really want to watch the rest of the episode. But like you say, it did give too much away.
Yeah.
You didn't need that much.
And by the time you'd met Carla Jacks... I'm saying that right, aren't I?
Yeah.
By the time you met Carla Jacks, there really wasn't anything else to find out.
No, that's it.
And it... You know, I just then spent the next half an hour not feeling the tension and not feeling the mystery. And I know he was going to other places, and I know he was looking at other things, but he just felt he kind of sold himself short by selling himself out too early.
Wouldn't it be nice that we'd find out there's another layer to the cyborg as well, that there was some kind of relationship between him and the Doctor previously?
Yeah. What kind of relationship, Simon?
Well, as in...
Are you going back to the flirtiness that we saw in Dinosaurs?
Brothers.
Yeah, well, that would have been good. That would have been a bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could mother have
been,
and son.
That could have been the trump card saved to the end.
Well, he did sort of make mention of things in that sort of direction, didn't he? Right towards the end of the episode.
Why did the cyborg have to be a man? Could have been his mother.
could have been.
Would he have done that to his mother? Would he have done that to his brother?
He might have done, if he's that heartless.
He did say, what was it he said? We were friends.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said we were friends.
I didn't take that on board.
Yeah, but then when he said that, I was thinking, well, if this guy used to be your friend, why have you turned him into a cyborg? You know, it's
clear.
Tattoo jealousy. tattoo envy. That's the word.
The cyborg had different tattoos to Carla Jacks, didn't he?
That's how they recognise themselves, each other.
Yeah, like, but then they gave... Well, you think the tattoos were different on everybody? And that's
I think so, weren't they?
Because they all had the same surname. It was Carla Jex and Carla Tack or whatever it was.
Well, that's different. Tack.
Carla Lane.
Jex and Tack are different.
No, no. It's the other way around, like with Indians, where you have the surname first and the forename.
Oh, I see. Right, got it.
Yeah, because they were all Carla this and Carla that. But none of them were Carla Lane. Is that what you're trying to say?
Carly Simon.
I'm sorry.
Carla Simon.
Oh, I think Carla Lane's better than Carla Simon.
It's tenuous. But,
very tenuous.
Thank you.
Mark, you've been completely silent for about half an hour.
I'm just taking in.
I'm going to give you another on the spot.
Joke.
I'm going to give you another on the spot.
Are we going to rate this one again? We're going to do the ratings?
Yeah.
We should do, really, shouldn't we?
I mean, anybody got anything else to say about it?
I'm all dried up, just like the tumbleweed.
I'm sure.
I'm in agreement with you on the fact that after first viewing, it's, you know.
Yeah,
I'm going to be one of those annoying people that just says you know all the time. You know.
Yeah, well, we are. We will watch it again. We will talk about it again in the future. So it'll be interesting. To see
Absolutely, when we do the series.
We'll do a series review when we go back to these stories afterwards how they compare with each other as opposed to individually. So we'll look at it again then for sure. Okay, then.
It'll be interesting to see what other people think as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating to read.
Well, if you've been listening to this and you want to make your feelings known, rather than email us, come and find us on Facebook, Blue Box Podcast, our page. And we have a thread for each story. And if you'd just like to say what you feel about each story, just come and find the Facebook page and, you know, give us your thoughts on the dedicated threads.
Mm.
And, yeah, we'll see what everybody makes of them. And we'll, you know, read out some of those messages when we do the series review.
Okay.
So, you want to score it then?
6 for me. It's quite low.
And Simon?
I don't think I'm ever going to rave about it. I think it will look better on second viewings, as you say. But in that respect, I will give it an optimistic 7 out of 10.
Yeah, me too. An optimistic 7 out of 10. You know, the funny thing is, the God complex. Sorry, Mark. Forgotten about you there.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
The funny thing about the God complex was, the first time I saw the God complex, I found that I loved it. But I also found it a slight disappointment, partly because we'd seen several of the elements already in the series, and partly because Toby's writing is so good that often there are a lot of things you don't really notice on the first go through that you pick up the second time. And when I reviewed it for Starburst, I gave it an 8 out of 10. But actually, afterwards, I revised that, and now I would give it a 10 because I just think it was a superlative episode.
Oh, really? I'll have to watch it again. Cause...
Well, I was the same the first viewing. I was nonplussed and a bit annoyed in places about, I don't know, just there's too much going on. I was thinking, oh, this is just trying, it's a bit contrived. That's what I was trying to think of, the word, contrived. Too many elements, trying to be something, trying to be creepy, trying to be weird. And I just walked away from it going, yeah, okay, meh. But actually, on second viewing, I just suddenly fell in love with it. This is great, actually.
Absolutely.
It's a lot
stunning,
of depth to this.
In fact.
It's a stunning episode.
Yeah.
And which is why I rated it highly on our 2011.
Right, yeah. I think, actually, see, this is why I like series 6. I think there are at least 4 or 5 10 out of 10 episodes in that series. I would say that's the best run overall of episodes that we've had since Doctor Who's come back. And I never thought I'd say that after series 5 about a Stephen Moffat series. And Mark, out of 10?
On first viewing, I would give that a 5.
Wow, that's pretty low.
Ooh.
I'm
grumpy.
I'm going to give it a 7 now, but before I write the review for the Starburst website, I'm going to watch it again. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if I were to give it an 8 or a 9. Possibly even,
really?
Probably not a 9, but an 8. We'll have to wait and see. But for now, a 7, I think.
I'm disappointed in as much as I, in that first 15 minutes when it was powering along and it was full of style and
yeah, it was a lot of style.
And optimism and ambition. I was thinking, oh, if this keeps up, it could be one of the strongest series ever.
Yeah, it just kind of tailed away a bit, didn't it?
It did, yeah. But you never know. You never know.
Yeah, there may be other pleasures
like
to discover.
This podcast is tailing away.
A bit like our consciousness.
Well, shall we call it a night then?
Indeed.
And, well, next time you hear from us, we'll be talking about The Power of Three, which from the next time trailer at the end of that does look
pretty cool.
I had my eyes closed.
So oh, did you? You
have no idea what it looks like.
I don't know. We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Tell you what I will say, though, from that clip at the end, and also the way that Rory and Amy are behaving, is that they've kind of relaxed into the role, in the way that the characters have relaxed into their roles with the Doctor. Mm. The fact that the Doctor's dipping in and out of their lives, that seems to be what's happening. And it works more so than it has other times.
Definitely.
Rory is definitely a very strong character now.
And in 2 weeks' time, of course, we're going to find out how it all ends.
Well, there was a hint, wasn't there? Wow.
Yeah.
There a hint in dinosaurs?
Yeah, there was a look.
Well, there was a look from the Doctor as if he knew that he was going to be expecting something.
Mm.
Very briefly, but on the subject of Rory, he's finally got his action figure and it looks like Stephen Moffat. It does, though.
Maybe that's the point.
What is the reason? Is there a reason behind the delay in Rory?
They're obviously taking the time out to make sure it looked as much like the actor as possible. And badly failing.
His body warmer.
He has, given that.
I think it's probably just because the sort of human figures in the Doctor Who toy range don't sell as well. And because Amy was the companion from the start, they had to do her figure immediately. And perhaps the Amy figures didn't sell particularly well, because especially with action figures, ranges aimed at boys, they won't buy girl figures so much. So perhaps the Amy didn't sell. Not for grown-ups. Not for grown-ups.
I was very pleased when I got Amy. You know, that was in the early days, you know. The first Amy Pond figure. Still got it in its box.
How many Amys have you had?
Mark?
Simon, you're so excited about talking about it. Your leg's going like a little dog's tail.
He needs a pee.
It's going.
It is. It's my age.
Strangely, all the figures that he's got are the ones where she's wearing the police outfit.
I've got the police outfit one as well.
Yeah, six of them.
No, you couldn't get them.
I've got two actually.
Because there was a drought, wasn't there? There was a drought. Yeah, Amy Pond figure.
A drought.
There was an Amy Pond drought.
Does that mean they went out of plastic?
They didn't make very many, and you couldn't get it for love.
What they used to do is they would supply a box with, I think, one of each figure in the box.
No, there were.
That's what I was told by a dealer.
But I'm going to explain slightly more detail. If the wave comes out with seven different figures, you'll get a box of 12 toys, of which five will be extras of five of the figures in the box and two of the figures in the box. There'll only be one of in each box. And the Amy, being a girl figure, which they weren't expecting to sell as well as the monsters, she just got one in each box. But because it was the Amy in the police uniform, all these 40-year-old blokes were out looking for Amys. And of course, by the time, you know, you got to the shops, all the Amys had gone.
They were chasing Amy.
Didn't they do something that made me very cynical? Didn't they do a thing where the police uniform one only came with a TARDIS toy? It came as part of a set, didn't it?
There was a reissue of the police uniform Amy with the TARDIS and with a Doctor.
But the TARDIS toy didn't have the electronics in it. So it was basically the same as the other TARDIS, but without the electronics in it.
No. The other TARDIS had been the David Tennant one. This was the first issue of the Matt Smith TARDIS, which is a different TARDIS design.
Well, I had one without any figures. Sure I did. Yeah, no, I have. Still got it boxed.
So the Matt Smith one?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you could be right. Hang on, I might be getting my timelines mixed up. I think there was a very limited issue of the box of the TARDIS just on its own. And then it came out with the Amy and the Doctor in a different jacket.
That's right.
I'm looking for Matt Smith. But what gets me is all these, keep my eyes open.
All these different figures with very slightly different jackets and what have you, and then they still didn't do a Rory figure.
It's how they make the money. There's two Rory figures coming out.
Have they done a Centurion?
What's the other one then? Is there a Centurion one?
No.
What you just said.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
No, it's exactly the same mold. Different coloured jumper, different coloured jacket.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's a... it's an exclusive to the BBC shop.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How about Autumn Rory?
Oh, no, I'd love to see Autumn Rory, yeah. I think we probably will now because they've got the Autumn Roman Rory body made.
We'll have to see him in the trailer the next time. He'll probably have Rory in his pants as well.
Dead Rory.
What?
All you have to do is lie him down.
Sorry, you had your eyes closed, didn't you?
I had my eyes closed.
Why didn't I thought
you had your ears open?
No, I had my ears blocked as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
How sad I am.
Right, we're definitely saying goodbye now. I was JR.
I was Lee.
I was Mark.
I was Simon.
And we'll see you next time.
Always look at Mark when you say, I'm JR, and you look to Mark. I'm here.
Yeah, but you're ugly.
Oh!
And that was the last ever Blue Box podcast.
Yeah, but then I look at Mark and it's no better.
Charming.
You're looking at Simon when you said Mark.
That's because I'm talking. I can't.
It's not easy.
I'm also the only one he hasn't called ugly, so that I'm going with that.
Let's end the podcast here.
You need eyes like a chameleon, so you can look at everybody.
Apparently, I'm the evil
like
looking this. One, aren't I? Oh, am I the mad looking one?
No, you're the nasty one, and I'm the evil one.
You're the evil one.
Yeah, I'm the evil one. You're the nasty one.
Are we not handsome, kindly looking, scary, and evil?
Oh, scary! Yeah, that
spice.
Was it.
Yeah, scary spice.
Yeah, I've been likened to Mel B. Oh,
scary box. Yeah.
Slightly Scary overweight. Box. And...
kind box. Evil box.
Handsome box.
Yeah. That wasn't it.
Handsome box.
Everyone likes a handsome box.
Are we now officially the Blue Box crew?
We're a gang.
Yeah, what's up?
I've had a gang before.
Very good.
Thank you.